This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy Pick the Week podcast, episode 341, brought to you by the Seagate GoFlex satellite and by Audible. Please visit audiblepodcast.com/ifanboy for your free audiobook download, and by iFanboy listeners like you. iFanboy.com Pick the League podcast. It's episode 341. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello there.
And Josh Flanagan.
Whatever.
Super hot Josh Flanagan.
Oh, it's...
Yeah.
It's the summertime.
It's summertime. Here it comes.
Yesterday it was 65. Today it's 95. This doesn't make sense.
At iFanboy.com, we like comics. We read comics. If we can read a bunch of comics, one of us picks the best one. We write about it on the website, talk about it in the podcast, along with other books of the week, topics of interest, emails and voicemails, your thoughts, and all kinds of fun things. I will not read that line that was meant to trip me up in the script, jerk. Before we get to the show, quick reminder, warning, this is a review show. We were talking about things that happened in this week's books. So if you're worried about spoilers, please be careful, pause, and come back. It'll be good for everyone. And
Nice work, Josh, for tripping up this.
I forgot about it. Now it's even funnier. I really wanted that Ron Burgundy moment. It's fine.
This God, week,
Reddit.
Josh, the dick, has the pick. First time someone's trying to actively sabotage us while we're doing the read.
Good. I don't think that's ever happened.
I don't think
we've reached
ever
a whole
happened.
New level. Now it's going to start. Yeah. There we
go. Oh, scalp number 59. It's big. It's orange. It's the penultimate issue. I liked it a lot. Okay, let's move on. No, anybody who's been listening to this for a long time knows that Scalped is my favorite ongoing comic book series, released in monthly format currently. And
you know what, I think we should remind everyone that you dropped Scalped at one point. Just so everyone has all the facts.
I never I tried the first one and I didn't like it.
And you dropped it.
Well, I wouldn't say I'd subscribed. Either way, I made that abundantly clear the first time I wrote a pick of the week for Scalped. It was after I had gone back. I read the first trade again, and the first couple of paragraphs are basically a long form apology to Jason Aaron.
I just feel like all the people who are new should know the full facts of the case.
You're turning this into a thing that isn't a thing.
It sounds like a thing.
For 6 months, you didn't read Scalped. Go ahead, continue.
Sure. But you know, we change. I was maybe in a crappy mood that week. Who knows?
Don't blame the comic book for your unhappiness.
Listen. It's got to be something.
It can't be me.
It's somebody's fault, and I'm not. You don't see me taking responsibility for it. Anyway, but for the last 50 whatever issues, I've been on the bus. And the thing about this is, you know, because there's one more left, they pretty much have to take care of everything in this one so that they can sort of wrap up all the loose ends in the next one. So this is the big firestorm conflagration issue. And if you look. Right up.
Firestorms in this? I did not. Where did that happen?
Double sales immediately.
Okay.
I just hear Earth Crisis. So.
The saddest thing on Earth. Reservation Crisis. but really what this is it's everything coming together all at once. And in the tradition of this book and the spirit of this book, that means there's going to be a lot of violence and fire and fighting and blood and all sorts of... really grim stuff.
Big old gun battle.
Yeah,
big
and that's basically what battle. It is. It's a big old shootout in sort of the empty husk of the casino, which is the center of the whole issue with the reservation. And all of the main players are drawn to this one place where they're going to battle it out, basically. And this was RM Guerra Unleashed. You know, he was just choreographing this big fight. There wasn't a ton of talking in the issue. It was really just, you know, the younger hoods that had come up under Red Crow have just decided to come and take over, and Red Crow you know, is fighting them off. And then Catcher with Bad Horse is his hostage. He shows up because he's gonna kill Red Crow himself. And then, you know, Bad Horse gets loose and everybody's fighting,
and there's a pack of wild dogs.
Oh yeah, and a pack of wild dogs just for fun, really. And, you know, like if you look at the work that Guerra did, it was like, you know, it's people creeping around corners and the whole place is dark because it's nighttime and there's no lights on and there's just ink everywhere. And he drew in every sound effect of bullets and gunfire and hits and all that stuff. And it was just a really like raw sort of energetic culmination of this whole story. And this is totally the way that it had to be. And it's that really great catharsis of you know, it's done now, and it ends with a big Mexican standoff. Everybody's pointing their guns at one another, and then the last page is, you know, the guns are fired, and then we'll find out where the bodies drop in the next issue. So it sort of hit on everything that is exciting about it, you know, using that monthly comic book form too. So we're left with a cliffhanger. We don't know what happens next. It's kind of everything I wanted it to be. You know, like you get worried with a lot of issues that they're, you know, at this point that they're going to disappoint you because you know, it's such a buildup and you've been so looking forward to them. But I didn't really expect it was going to disappoint me. Like Jason Aaron is not a ball dropper,
right?
As far as we can tell. So, you know, it gave me everything I wanted, and I was really happy with it. Connor, you have a fun time.
I liked that there was a callback to the way beginning of the series where Bad Crow, he could be Bad Crow after this is over. Bad Horse runs into the guy he beat up with the nunchucks in the very beginning of this, of the series. I like the fact that Red Crow fought not only with guns, but with traditional Indian weapons. He throws a spear through one guy's throat. He's got a tomahawk. He uses a cutoff catcher's hand. He's got a knife in his teeth. I mean, it's a brutal final issue. We knew that this is where it was going to go. I mean, this is a brutal series. There's no way this was not going to end with a lot of blood, which is what we got here. I actually found myself thinking that I really like the fact that the paper is rough for this book.
Yeah,
it's very tactile in that sense, and it's a very rough book. It just feels appropriate. I don't know this feels appropriate on a glossy page.
Yeah, no, it sort of goes back to a slightly older kind of comic with a you know that news more newsstandy kind of newsprint kind of paper.
And yeah, it just when you turn it, you feel it on your fingers. It feels it doesn't feel good, which is what you know was appropriate for this book in that sense. It's completely coincidental because it's cheap, I guess, which is why most of the Vertigo books are printed on it. But it works in this sense. And it's not a lot to talk about because, as Josh said, there wasn't a lot of story or dialogue. It was just a lot of shooting in a casino. But it was what was happening, who was shooting at each other and why, and the casino being lit on fire with a Molotov cocktail full of $100 bills and a lot of symbolism and just a lot of great culmination here.
It's exactly what it should have and you wanted it to be, is basically. Yeah. You know, and everybody doing this, everybody working on the book at this point is – They're going on drive and passion. I mean, it's not like this is a huge seller. It's not like, you know, they're just doing it because they did this thing and they want to finish it. And, you know, it's not so much different than what the characters are going through. And, you know, from the cover on the front, that's sort of
beautiful,
but amazingly eye-catching cover. There's not going to be a cover on the stands this week, you know, that's going to draw your eye more than that one. And it may not look like anything at first, but it's gorgeous. It's one of my favorites from the series. Just representing that fire and that sort of anger and passion and everything that's going on in there. Nothing beat that for me this week. It was just real well done and I don't want to say fun. Fun's not the right word, but it's fun in the way that this book is fun.
Well, it's fun in the sense that it was a big shootout, and that's exciting, but I mean, it's not happy, I guess, is a better way to describe it.
I have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Love that. I love that. A lot of times, you know, you can expect, well, in the next, this guy's going to be dead and this one's alive. I don't know who's going to live. I don't know who the bad guy is. I don't know who the good guy is. I don't know what Agent Nitz is going to do when he shows up because he's on the way there too. He's the other big player. And they've got just enough time to sort of button everything up.
Yeah. No, I'm really looking forward to the final issue and also not looking forward to the final issue.
Yeah, I'm cool though. I'm cool with it ending. I think that
sure. I just it's sad. It's one of those books that's been around for most of the length of the show.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, it's one of those type
it's
books.
It's gonna be a milestone when it ends. It's kind of like an end of an era almost.
Yeah, and then the dark side will have fully consumed Jason Aaron.
But
his beard grew 3 sizes that day.
I will admit it was a striking cover on the racks to walk by in the store on Wednesday. Yeah,
it's beautiful. It's the flames coming off the top of the casino, but it really is impressionist in a way that you don't really see it until you really get close.
One out of Jock was not nominated for an Eisner this year or last for best covers.
Yeah,
and that's stupid.
Yeah, way stupid. But it's another Vertigo book wrapping up. I mean, this Sweet Tooth, Vertigo's not what it once was.
I think Unwritten is either done or halfway done, I think, or
yeah,
almost done. There's another a bunch of them are like that.
Yeah. Except Fables, man. Willingham just won't quit.
Nope. That money train will not stop.
Here's another series.
Oh.
Another series. Bam! I got spinoffs, bitch!
Well, I was glad to see that this issue Scout came out on a week that I didn't have the pick, so you can celebrate it.
I won't be timed. I might not be able to do the next one.
I know, yeah.
It was good on its own merit, obviously.
Right, of course.
Yes, no, definitely.
Jason Aaron, also a writer of the next book, I guess.
Yeah, so your little AVX update this week, really the only notable book was Wolverine and the X-Men, which is this week's books, including I think X-Men Legacy was another AVX tie-in, are all picking up on after the events of AVX number 6, where now the Phoenix 5 and the rest of the X-Men have declared war on the Avengers. And they didn't really go into it in AVX number 6 as to what No More Avengers means or whatever it is. Right. But apparently that means they're capturing them and holding them prisoner.
to me, the biggest thing was the fact that somehow between the last this issue and the last AVX issue is that the Beast changed his mind
again. Yeah, exactly.
Because now he's back on board.
Well,
he's,
I think I think that's a case of too many cooks in the kitchen and not being able to keep things straight and you know Beast's big walking out on AVX 6. I guess this was I can only speculate, but I guess Aaron had written this issue before that issue was done or what, you know, like I don't know how to explain it, but this is an editorial continuity gaffe, you know. And it makes this the whole greater story suffer because it's like, well, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense, you know. The other interesting thing on this, at least aside, this issue mainly focused from the it's notable to say it's the first Wolverine the X-Men AVX crossover that I didn't delight and be amused by. I was like, it felt as heavy as the rest of AVX has been. Not to say it was bad, but every issue of Wolverine the X-Men still had a little bit of that Wolverine the X-Men charm. And really, the only one this had was with Kid Gladiator, and that was like in glimpses and like, you know, moments.
Well, this is also the first time that it's been completely the AVX story.
Yeah.
Usually we had at least a B plot in the school.
Yeah.
Where this is completely just Avengers versus X-Men. Kid Gladiator was funny, especially the last page when his dad shows up.
Yeah. But this is all mainly done from the point of view of Rachel Summers, Phoenix Marvel Girl, whatever you want to call her, because basically the Phoenix Five and the X-Men are using her as her hound capabilities from back when she was in the future when she was a hound hunting down mutants, using those skills so that she could hunt down the Avengers. And I thought that was a really interesting angle. That was a good way to tie it back to the history of the character as well as give it relevance in the story. And Connor, you don't read X-Men Legacy, right?
No, I don't.
Well, that was the issue where Rogue fought Ms. Marvel and they argued, and the classic Rogue Ms. Marvel kind of face off, and then Rogue ended up winning, and magic came and teleported in and took Ms. Marvel to a volcano where she's opened up a portal to Limbo where they're keeping the Avengers captive. Right. I don't understand how that's the solution. We'll keep them captured.
Because it's Civil War again. Yeah, I know. Civil War. They opened up a new dimension and put the bag.
This time, everything really is going to change. This time.
Ron, my question to you, in the first X-Men ad in this book.
Which one?
The Neil Adams, Christos Gage story.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, the first. All right, the first X-Men book.
What is going on with Magneto's hair?
Hey, man. It was the early 60s.
I don't think that's true.
Neil Adams cannot be contained.
It looks like he drew him regular, then at the end they decided to add a little bit at the end to make it look long.
Yep.
God, that's crazy.
All I got to tell you, come this August, there's one book I'm reading, and it is the first X-Men.
I look forward to the update in the show.
Yeah, it should be good.
Now, Josh tweeted out something to the effect that the best Andy Kubert art is when Joe Kubert inks him. And that is absolutely true. And before Watchmen, Night Owl number one, we have Joe inking his son, Andy. And he's done that before a bunch of times, notably in the DC Legacies issue they drew together, which was gorgeous. And again, this just continues to show that the two of them together is a sight to behold. It doesn't look like Andy Kubert's standard art. And it doesn't look like Joe's standard art, although it ends up looking more like Joe than Andy.
Yeah, it does.
Well, who said it? On Josh's Talksplode with Gabe Hardman and Jeff Parker, I think who said that the last person to touch the page is whose art it looks like. And so it looks like Joe Kubert's because he inked it over Andy's pencils. So.
Yeah.
But just beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, really, you know, really, the first thing I noticed when I looked at this is like, this is a very good-looking book in a way that's completely different from how, like, Amanda Conner's book was good-looking.
Yep.
It actually felt more like Watchmen, I guess, sort of visually than the other stuff, for whatever reason.
They're doing a really good job, if anything at all, with this series, with the art.
Yes.
Yeah.
Across the board so far, the art has just been wonderful.
I mean, that's why we're not talking about the story standpoint and that this is the first book that really folds into the original Watchmen story.
And it was a place that actually very much did beg for an explanation or not an explanation, but like it was one of the places where they talked about it a lot, but we didn't really know very much about it.
Well, you see, I mean, to that point, I don't know whether it begged an explanation. As the book got to the end, and basically the key moment is the meeting of all the heroes and Night Owl and Rorschach and Dr. Manhattan and Ozymandias and the comedian when they meet up and talk about teaming up and that sort of thing. This added more to that scene that I didn't want.
No, I agree with that part. Yeah. When I say that, the part that was really interesting to me was young Dan. I forget his last name.
Dryburgh.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that in the sort of way that I was very surprised by this book. Longtime listeners may know I am not the biggest Straczynski fan. Guy's got skills. That's undeniable. But there's something about stuff I usually tend to not like. But I really enjoyed the setup of Dan's sort of life. I really liked the interplay with him and Hollis Mason. Mm-hmm. And the thing was, as you got to the end, like that part was kind of over.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. That could have been the whole series.
Yes, and that I would have been really happy with.
Yeah, I think this series is more successful. I mean, I think this whole project before Watchmen is more successful the less it's connected to the story.
I agree, totally agreed. But
if it stays in the past, it can be in the past, live in the past, and not affect the. And I don't say affect is the wrong word, but not interact with the main story.
Yeah, I mean, if this was how Dan Dryburgh became Night Owl, and all, like I'm there, I'll read it. But yeah. This feels like he was just on fast forward to get to the team up with Rorschach. And now with the Rorschach series coming, like, okay, but I, you know, like, is that going to go there as well? Like, yeah, so it's.
Further, if there was any weakness to this that I would give is that I, for whatever reason, Rorschach didn't seem quite right to me.
Well, I thought that too, but then I remember, in the series, he changed.
Yes.
He's a different person before the whole incident with the kid and the dogs.
Absolutely.
So he becomes a different. He talks differently after that. They mentioned that in the story.
In that broken way. I just feel maybe, and I don't remember. Did the?
Oh, I know what I know what I'm gonna say.
During the original Watchmen of Rorschach during this era,
there was very little.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe it's like not the voice I would have chosen, or he was still very odd, but not odd in the same way. So I think it would be to make him less odd.
Too many Herms.
That's exactly the point. I've been waiting to say that. In the span of two pages, there are five Herms.
You overdid it. Especially
totally overdid it. Totally.
The last three panels, or yep. The last page.
Yep. Even in the page before that, when he wait, I missed one. Six Herms after the second Herm, where he goes Herm, and Dan and Night Owl says, stop that. Like, don't. Herm.
That was very. Subtle in a way that it I really wish it wasn't.
Yep.
It's gonna be tough because I really enjoy the art in these books.
Yeah.
I wish stories weren't so strange.
No, we should have been doing with you because you committed to reading the first issues and then choosing. So what we haven't asked is whether you're gonna stick with them or not.
I don't know. That's
you still
tough
don't
thing.
Know?
I don't
wow.
Mm. No, because I love the art. I want more of this art, but I don't know if I want more of the story.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even the coloring.
I might not. I might only stick with so far just the first two, the Amanda Connor and Darwin Cook book and then the Darwin Cook book. I'm not even sure about that.
I made a casserole from the Darwin Cook book the other night, and it was so good.
The Darwin Cook book. It's just really manly stuff. There's a lot of whiskey and everything.
Oh, yeah. No. I mean, it was like a beer. It was a beer-braised pork kind of casserole.
Right, sure.
Yeah.
Everything is based basically on ground beef.
Yeah.
Beef and salt. That's
the Darwin cookbook's much like the Ron Swanson cookbook. It's
bread.
Just steak and whiskey.
There's some asparagus in there. Come on, he knows.
Sure.
I feel like Brussels sprouts is in the Darwin cookbook,
But then afterwards it says you have to go outside and chop down a tree.
Sure, yeah.
I did get a ticket for because let's be honest, I just can't go chopping down trees in right. the city. But
right. Well, I mean, you could just get into a bar fight. I mean, that works.
That's true. Or that as well.
Yeah. You steal a car.
So, or make someone drink a shot at 9 a.m. So, yeah, it's weird. It's the same thing I had a problem with the last book because I don't know what to do.
Very
yeah.
conflicted.
Yeah.
Very conflicted. I mean, again, it's not bad, but it doesn't feel right.
And the same problem is next week with Jay Lee. We got to early look at that book and let's look at it. Oh, God, I don't know what to do. Adam Hughes, When's the last time Adam Hughes did an interior part?
That's the big thing, but I don't know.
I love Adam Hughes. The thing is, I don't think what anyone realizes is these books aren't done.
That's what we said.
They didn't. They didn't wait to solicit these till they were done. These are not done. No.
I'll tell you something. I can't talk about it yet, I don't think.
But I don't know. I think the one I'm definitely not continuing on is last week's the comedian one. That's definitely one of them.
Oh, no. I'd forgotten about that already.
Yeah, exactly. That's like the whole time I've been talking about the other books and forgot about that one. Superman Family Adventures number 2 is notable for a couple of reasons. One, it features a cameo by the Tiny Titans, who
issue took them.
Yeah, that's all it took. Well,
and they get to say their little signature catchphrase. 2, Chloe Sullivan's in it.
Really?
3, there's a great joke that I highlighted in the best panels in which Bizarro shows up and is complimenting Jor-El's costume and says it's a bad outfit because he speaks backwards, but it's a reference.
It's a bad outfit.
That is a bad outfit.
It's a very clever way to put that joke in there. And 4, this is just so much fun. God, this is fun. I mean, this is great. I continually marvel over how talented these guys are. It's a clever book. The cartooning is wonderful. There's a lot of jokes that last throughout the book, but they're very subtle. Just great stuff. Superman Family Adventures works for everyone. It's a true all ages book.
So, Batman Incorporated number 2 is not an all ages book.
No.
I dug this. I gotta say, I didn't think I'd be missing this as much. I was fading out at the end of the last version of Batman Incorporated, and I read the first one on a whim, and I picked this one up. This sort of history of Talia and Ra's al Ghul, and it was really interesting.
This feels more like the older Grant Morrison stuff of in the beginning when it was really solid.
Yeah.
Chris Burnham is really coming along.
I was going to say, I mean, sort of, I don't want to say from out of nowhere because we've known about him for a while, but, you know, he worked on smaller books and didn't get his foot in the door. And all of a sudden, like, he is hooked up on this book.
You know what I think it is? I think it's once a young artist gets the opportunity to focus on one title and kind of minimize the distractions and just, you know, like all he's been about is Batman Incorporated since he's been able to hone, and who knows what the working, you know, experience between him and Grant is, or him and Mike Martz, the editor, or whomever, but he's just every issue you've seen an improvement to the point where it's like he's solid.
Yeah, and more solid.
Yeah.
The layouts in this are wonderful. And, you know, the first time I ever saw Burnham's art was on what was the book? The Joe Casey.
Officer Down,
right. Yeah. And even back then it was like, wow. You know, right. And this is actually pulled back from that a little in terms of sort of putting everything on the page. And it's strong, you know, it's not necessarily as visually stunning, but it's sort of stronger comic booking because of it. Great layouts through this whole thing, great storytelling. Right. Good acting.
I love Ra's al Ghul and Talia, I think.
Yeah.
When I was a kid reading comics in the 80s, Ra's al Ghul was the main villain in the 70s and 80s in Batman comics. They introduced him. He was kind of that era's main guy. And I feel like every book I bought, either he or Talia were in it somehow. And so for me, they're my favorites. And
there hasn't been enough shirts off sword fighting in comics.
No.
Yeah.
Hairy chested shirts off sword fighting.
And you know, credit to Burnham.
He did it.
Hairy chest in this.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yep.
That's the way it should have been. I love that Al Ghul is such a different villain than all the Gotham villains.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's completely different set of circumstances than with the Joker. You know, and they bring out different sides of the sort of Batman character, which we haven't seen Al Ghul all that much. Like, he pops in now and again, but in this,
he's been regular since, because he's been eating his fiber. He's been regularly in the books since Batman Begins, but mostly in the side books. He was in a lot of the Red Robin books and stuff like that. He was one of the main villains in the Red Robin book, but not really facing off against Batman himself. He's great because you're right. It's a different kind of Batman villain. It's a different kind of experience. It's a bit more complicated. It's not so black and white.
And he sort of plays off the sort of billionaire playboy aspect of it rather than the dark vengeance of the night aspect of it, I guess.
Yes. Which is what Grant Morrison said he wanted to do way back when he started on Batman, was he wanted to bring back that sexy 70s era Batman.
And it's more Bruce Wayne than it is Batman.
Yeah.
When you're going against Al Ghul, I think.
Right.
Maybe that's it.
I like that Ra's al Ghul will show up to a Live Aid concert and pick up a chick.
That's hey, badass, man. By the way.
Yeah.
That was the best. Just that first page, I was like, is this happening? Is this what I... It is.
And he's got his cape on, too. Which didn't
and I went back, too. I was like, wait a minute. Is he wearing his cape in this? And I like that, like, if you do the math, of course, that would be in the mid-80s.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So,
and then that he gets his daughter for her 16th birthday, a lair.
Yeah.
A lair in London, under the underground, yeah. Which is nice. I love this book.
Whatever it has ponies.
American Vampire 26 was notable because I think when Raphael Albuquerque is not drawing the book, it's not as good. I think, and it's still good, but it's not as good. I think when he is drawing the book, it's
with the exceptions of the miniseries, I agree with you.
Yeah, I'm just talking about the regular series itself. It's something special about it when he draws it.
Yeah, it was... basically another chapter we get to go back and see what's happening with the people that we'd left behind, because we took quite a few detours, but a bunch has happened, and now we're sort of going back. And of course the big reveal here is it's on the cover, is Skinner shows up and he's the man now.
Yeah,
he's been co-opted,
and they're back in Hollywood, which I think is a nice sort of circle back to the beginning. From that first story, the first arc was the girl in Hollywood. But I think it's fun. I think this book is great. I like it when it's in Hollywood for some reason. I like the fact that it's all sort of tied into this weird Hollywood underground where there's a vampires run Hollywood, and I like that bit of it.
I like the big open timeline thing that we get to jump around a lot in the span of a long time. I really enjoy that about this book. It was actually something that. I'm going to compare it to Strangers in Paradise. Like, it was a thing about that book I really liked, is that there was a timeline that just existed and you got to watch different parts of it at different times. This is a bigger in scope, I guess, but it's something I really enjoy about it.
Mm.
Cool.
It's such a neat haircut that they give Skinner. Just really saying that, no, I'm part of the company now.
They have health insurance. Hard being freelance.
All right, so we want to give a thanks and a shout out to Seagate for sponsoring this episode, and tell you all about the Seagate GoFlex Satellite. It's the only wireless portable hard drive that streams content to your iPad and up to 8 other devices. This is a really cool device. I've got one. I played with it. It's super cool. It's got a 500 gigabyte hard drive in it, Wi-Fi access, and a rechargeable battery. Satellite can carry your entire library of video, music, pictures, documents, whatever you want, shared on your iPad or any other tablet device that you might have via the free GoFlex Media app or the web browser. So you can check it out. Head over to this URL. I'm going to spell it out, but we'll also have a link on the show notes on ifanboy.com on the post for this episode. You can head to http://ifn.by/Seagate GoFlex. That's ifn.by/Seagate GoFlex, all one word. And if you've got kids, if you've got if you travel a lot and you want to bring a lot of movies or TV shows on the go with you, this is a great way you can store all the media on this hard drive, stream it all to your tablet, and watch it whenever you want. The Seagate GoFlex is really cool, and we want to thank Seagate for coming on board and sponsoring this episode and a lot of what we're doing over the next couple of months. So big thanks to Seagate.
Yes, and Batman the Dark Knight, number 10, is notable because David Finch used to be the writer-artist in this book, and now he's just the artist. Greg Hurwitz is the new writer, and he wrote the Penguin miniseries that was out a little while ago.
Oh, right, yeah.
That was really enjoyable. This is a more horror-tinged Batman book. This is what they always said it was going to be, and I read one issue, didn't like the Dark Knight under Finch, but... I enjoyed the Penguin series. So I picked this up and I really enjoyed it. It was good. It is more horror tinge. It's a really, really, really creepy scarecrow who sews his mouth shut in the opening page proceeds to wreak havoc through Gotham.
Is there any rebar in it?
Oh, dude, I saw a guy walking down the street with like 3 things of rebar and I had to cross the street.
They're like bouncing on his shoulder.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it was awful.
I like that we have a collective, unnatural fear of rebar.
Oh, man. Anyway.
No rebar, but still scary. And I'm not saying rebar won't show up later.
Can't be that scary.
Ugh.
Just, you know.
Awful.
Well, I didn't see his other hand while he was sewing. He could have been holding a piece of rebar. But if you want a more horror, scary tinged Batman, and I think the great thing about these Batman books is they're all different tones. So if you want that kind of Batman story, that's in Dark Knight now with Greg Hurwitz.
Cool. Prophet number 26 featured. This one was all. It was a total Brandon Graham joint. Brandon Graham showing off his artistic skills. If you read King City, you know how good of an artist or what type of style Brandon Graham has. And this was very much in his natural style. And it was another fun story. I have no idea what the fuck is going on in this book, and I couldn't care less. It's so much fun to read and so much fun to experience. And out there, science fiction ideas that are not so much crazy, but just kind of mind blowing-y. And I really like the last page where there was a little mini, Mobius strip comic in its own kind of thing at the bottom, which is pretty cool.
Similarly, the Manhattan Project's number 4, also from Image. I have 2 points. One, I think this might have been my favorite issue of the series.
Every issue is my favorite issue.
And yeah. Two, can you or someone explain to me? All right, so Einstein opens up a portal to another dimension, and another Einstein comes out.
No, another Einstein is there waiting for him.
Right, waiting for him. Knocks him out with a
crab,
and then does he switch places with him?
Yep.
Yeah.
So which Einstein are we?
We've been seeing evil Einstein from the alternate dimension who can't figure out how to open the door.
Okay.
So what happened was,
I just wanted to make sure.
So our Einstein, Blue Einstein, built the door, figured out how to open it. When he opened it, there was evil Red Einstein on the other side who built the door but couldn't figure out how to open it. He knocks him out, swaps places with him, and then the door shuts. And that's why when the series opened, he was just staring at the door because he couldn't figure out how to open it. And now in the present, he brought in Richard Feynman and used him to help him open the door.
Now the Einstein that we've been seeing all of this time is the evil Einstein, except for this flashback scene.
Right.
Denoted helpfully by Blue and Red.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
This was fucking awesome.
And it was super fantastic.
The opening scene with the aliens.
Yes. Yeah.
That was great when they can't translate that they annihilated and killed the planet and children and everybody. It's like, I didn't catch that. Oh, sorry, it's not translatable. but I love that not only is Hickman seeding little mysteries in it, but he's very quickly addressing them. You know, it's like, okay, there's Einstein in that door in the first issue. What is that? Here, issue 4, we're finding out.
Not only that, we just like, we've been looking at Einstein the whole time. And we all know about him in real life. And he's the one that they're teasing us with. And now they've given us something.
Yeah.
I could almost wait a little longer.
Yep.
You know, it's interesting. In the same way that Scalped has this energy to it that doesn't exist in Jason Aaron's other writings, which are very good. Manhattan Projects has that energy to it that that Hickman's Marvel stuff doesn't have, which is also very good.
A sense of fun. I don't know, like I don't know if fun is the right word, but just like,
well, I think it's part of that whole new creator revolution we're having right now. I think these guys' hearts are really in these other books. They'll never say it publicly. They can't, and that's not to say that they don't enjoy writing X-Men and Fantastic Four. But clearly they do.
And also, I think that you can see the benefit that doing all of that has had on his writing.
Sure, I think they're both much better than they were when they started.
If you compare the creator-owned projects before Fantastic Four and other stuff compared to this, I think you're seeing a much stronger serialized long-form storyteller.
Yes,
which is
absolutely
fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Plus his character work is much better now than it was when he started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, cool. So Flash number 10 and Justice League number 10 are more of a curious kind of art kind of standpoint. Flash number 10 shows that while I've been enjoying Francis Manapul's art and have been okay with his story with him and Brian Buccoletto writing it, when he's not drawing it, it goes down a whole bunch of notches. And then furthermore, I've never seen Marcos Toes art before, but somebody better call Mark Bagley because somebody's ripping off a style. Like, I open it up, I'm like, is this Bagley? And then I realize it's Toe.
Similar.
It's very similar.
Aspen. He's an Aspen guy.
It's very similar.
Toe's better, I think.
Oh, really? Wow. Okay.
Yeah. He's the current artist in Batwing. He used to draw Red Robin. I think he was an inker for a long time, and now he's a pencil. I think this issue really showed how overwritten.
Yep, exactly.
The story is, and I think these guys are new writers, and that's something that new writers tend to go through. But I mean, I think the editors need to get a handle on this quick, because this issue particularly was really overwritten.
That page where Patty and the dude are trapped in the basement, it's just like, I was like, yeah, oh, so was, many like words.
Turf. That was like turf. It was just word balloons stacked in word balloons. And it's just, there's a lot of things that could be cut here. You know, cut the fat. You know, less is more.
So
more cliches about writing.
Yeah, there you go. Justice League number 10. I'm less focused on the story because I know, Connor, you're starting to really like it. I want to see if that continued. But as I read this, I just couldn't believe, like, the multiple inkers on Jim Lee. I think are really hurting it. It doesn't look like Jim. It doesn't have that same excitement.
Only when Scott Williams inks him is when it looks really.
Agreed.
The rest doesn't. But the reason I wanted to talk about this is because we got Takitani in the backup.
We did.
It was basically a big old tiger. DeGarry Frank.
Do you have a jetpack?
No, he's a tiger in the zoo. Oh. But Billy talks to him, calls him Takitani.
Calls him Tawny. Never said Taki.
Yeah. And then the Black Adam shows up at the end. But the backup is wonderful.
Yeah, the backup is great.
It would never sell its own book, and I don't think Gary Frank could do it monthly. But as a backup, it's fantastic. The Justice League story is fine. It's just you're right. I did really notice this time in particular that the inker situation really does affect.
And I just can't get excited about it. I can't get excited the same way. I mean, even like thinking back to Wildcats or Divine Right or all the other Batman stories, anything like that. This feels like less than Jim Lee.
I think if the rumors are true that he's wrapping up this storyline and the new artist comes on, I think that will be a benefit to the book, unfortunately.
Agreed.
Just because the look is too inconsistent.
Agreed. So that's it. So those are the books that came out this week that we enjoyed. Go to ifanboy.com/comics. You can see them all. Do your pull list.
Let's do the top the user.
Before
we get to the user reviews, let's list off the top five picks of the week as picked by the community. You can go to ifanboy.com/comics. You can make your pull list, and you can also rate and review your books, and you can choose your own pick of the week and get it on this list. Get it up, get to the top, push it to the top. The top five picks of the week per the audience at the time of recording, which is important to note because somebody got annoyed last week.
This is
going to
be some
jockeying. Yeah. Number five, iVampire, number 10 with 3.8%. Number four, shocking entry into the top five, is Voltron, number 6 with 6.2%.
Jesus.
Number three, I stopped reading that.
I dropped it too, but I did walk by it at the store, and the cover was the Voltron robot's head, and I was like, oh, did they finally get the fucking lions in the book? Maybe that's why I did so well.
Number three was the I Can't Wait Pick of the Week, Scalped 59 with 14.9%. Number two was Batman Incorporated, number two with 22.8%. And number one, with a bullet, was the Manhattan Project's number four with 30.5%. Not an overwhelming victory, but a nice solid victory.
Nice. I like the spread in this week. It was a lot of solid books.
The top three were all fantastic.
I would have to agree with Manhattan Project's. That was my pick of the week. So
I gave a lot of fives this week. Good week of books.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. The first user review is from Jerry Blankstare. I knew that would work.
Hey, Jerry Blankstare.
What? Oh.
Hey.
We're talking about Hypernaturals number one, story of 5 out of 5, and the art of 5 out of 5, and the pick of the week percentage is 1.7%. And he says, the whole review, there sure is a lot of talk about Marvel getting back to doing cosmic. Well, while we all wait for that to happen here is one awesome book that is fulfilling the void. Hypernaturals are a team of superpowered individuals who sign up for one or more tours of duty. The bright, shiny new team disappears in the first mission, and earlier members and the leftovers from the last selection process come together to find the team. There is world building aplenty, and between the free Comic Book Day number zero issue and this one, Abnett and Lanning have built a complex new world that is totally worth checking out. This one from Boom. Abnett and Lanning, of course, the architects behind the wonderful Marvel Cosmic books of a number of years past. They're taking on this and building a new world. And I had meant to read this.
Those guys know what they're doing. And Boom, slowly, quietly putting out some quality stuff.
They got to. They got to replace the Wade void.
Yeah, exactly, or the Stan Lee void. But between this and Higher Earth and stuff, doing some fun science fiction, I'm digging it. So
Yeah, very cool.
So our next review comes from Matrix, who reviewed Spider-Man number two.
Spider-Man.
Gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5, and 2.2% of you made it all your pick of the week. And Matrix says, this comic delivers a pretty sweet second act that gets the usual comic meet and greet out of the way, but does it pretty slickly and with service to both Spider-Men's and their abilities. There's an atypical trip to Nick Fury's headquarters, which isn't an obstacle for once, and keeps the momentum rolling straight up to that final scene with Mysterio. I really enjoyed the gags of Peter calling Miles on an 11-year-old black version of himself and calling him Spider-Boy. It's great to have Miles a chance to speak to someone as close to the man that inspired him. I mean, again, Pacelli is drawing one of the most beautiful comic books there is. This I liked more than the first issue because more did happen. But when I was thinking about this, I'm like, oh, this is gonna be a great trade.
Yeah.
This is gonna be a solid, great story. But then issues it leaves a little lacking. But stuff did happen. They had the fight. They found out each other. There was some, you know, that great Bendis dialogue. And agreed that the trip to Nick Fury wasn't the MacGuffin that it normally is. Like, it's actually a part of it and part of the story. It makes sense, and I dig it. It was good.
So is Mysterio the crossover character?
Yeah, is Mysterio from the Ultimate Universe figured out a way to 616?
Or is it the other way around?
No, it's the Ultimate Mysterio.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
The angry, like, failed showbiz guy.
Right.
But, like,
I liked it a lot. I do think it'll be better altogether, though.
Yeah.
We would also like to thank Audible. Audible is the internet's leading provider of spoken audio entertainment, information, and educational programming. Content from Audible is downloaded and played back on personal computers, CDs, or iPad players. Audible offers over 100,000 hours of audio programs from 270 content partners that include leading audiobook publishers, broadcasters, entertainers, magazine and newspaper publishers, podcasters, and business information providers. Listen whenever and wherever you want, just like the podcast you're listening to right now. Audible has over 1,000 science and technology and over 1,100 science and fiction fantasy books, with more being added all the time. Audible has over 100,000 titles to choose from. Every genre, Audible has it covered. Get a free audio book download when you sign up for free trial today. Go to www.audiblepodcast.com/ifanboy to get your free audiobook right now. And we have a recommendation for you.
Yes.
It is Alpha by Greg Rucka. Greg Rucka's latest prose novel, which I finished reading a couple weeks ago. And it's fantastic. If you like Rucka's, you know, action-adventure style, it's a military, you know, action-adventure thriller. It's basically a terrorist attack on a Disneyland-type theme park, and the one former special forces guy in the middle of it trying to save the day. And it's what you expect from Greg Rucka. It's fast paced, it's action packed, it feels very authentic, and it's the first in a series of hopeful three novels. He's writing the second one right now.
Cool.
Does he read the audiobook? I know he doesn't, but that would be great.
No, he doesn't.
If he did, I would listen to it again.
That would be. I'm checking to see who read it. After hearing you Paul rave about the book, I've been meaning to pick it up, and I might listen to it on Audible.
I love audiobooks. Yeah.
Audiblepodcast.com/ifanboyrun. You can get your free trial and you can download Alpha.
It's a good idea. I might do that.
I have to not listen to audiobooks so that I can do other things.
You just get lost in it. Yeah.
Any excuse I have to listen to it, I pop headphones in my head. So I have to take breaks.
So
get to the end of that story.
Do you put it in front of the fireplace and just sit there and listen like it's the old timey radio?
No, I have to be doing something.
Oh.
I can't just sit there and listen. So, like, I have to go for a walk.
Fireside chats.
Nah, I got to do dishes, something. I got to be moving with my hands.
So it is narrated by Rob Shapiro, not by Greg Rucka. It's 9 hours and 17 minutes long. So you want 9 hours of entertainment? You could listen to Rob Shapiro reading Greg Rucka's Alpha. Rob Shapiro, who also narrates End This Depression Now by Paul Krugman, The Aqua Teen Progression by Robert Ludlum.
The Krugman book and the Alpha book are different.
Yeah, and the Aqua Teen one also.
Rob Shapiro also narrates Click, The Magic of Instant Connections by Ron Braffman and Ori Braffman, the Braffman brothers.
Those guys.
I gotcha. So go to Audible Podcast.
Who's downloading that book?
Go to audiblepodcast.com/ifanboy today. Check it out.
Dude, did you listen to Click? Oh, Shapiro banged it up, man.
Those Profit Brothers. Oh, I love them. All right, on to the email. Our first email comes from 80 from Indonesia. Indonesia? Is that our furthest email we've ever gotten?
We've got New Zealand. Is that further away than Indonesia?
It's over there.
Well, it depends on which direction you go. It's over.
Yeah. I went to public school.
I mean, they're both on the relative opposite side. Both of them, hellacious plane flights.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. At least from where we're coming from.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Is it far enough away where I hear about the plane length and go, do I really want
to
go?
Yeah, it's I mean, it's you need to plan several days on either side of that.
Yeah.
Because it's going to mess you up.
Yeah. Anyway, so AD writes and says, I have some questions about the creator-owned comic series. It seems that there are many new series coming out from Image. Do many comic book artists prefer Image than other publishers because of their creator-owned concept? Why was Casanova moved from Image to Marvel's Icon? Does that make Casanova owned by Marvel? This question comes to mind since Paulo Rivera's departure from Daredevil to make a creator-owned comic, which is sad. Anyway, I hope the question wasn't too long, and sorry for my English, which was totally fine, AD. I appreciate if you guys took the time reading this email. So, a little more clarification on what's going on with the creator-owned thing.
And also, when he referred to Paulo Rivera said he was done on Daredevil, no hard feelings, it's fine, but he wants to concentrate on doing creator-owned works after 10 years of working for Marvel exclusive.
Well, and that's what it boils down to, is that while Paulo Rivera did a beautiful job on Daredevil, Marvel owns it. Mm-hmm. And they're paying him. And he knows that.
He said in his blog post that, you know, I paid a page rate. It was fine. It was great. I appreciate it. But at the end of the day, I have no stake in anything I've drawn for 10 years. So, right. You know, it's hard to – how do you retire on that? You don't really.
Right. And so the whole creator-owned push and what's going on with Image Comics and all that sort of stuff is the idea being that if creators create their own concepts and characters and retain ownership, then if they spin the Wheel of Fortune and if they get a movie or a TV series or a video game or anything like that.
Or the books just stay in print.
They can profit more from it because it's not work for hire. It's, you know, they profit from the ongoing success of that property. It's tough because it's a tough – so we've talked to a lot of creators about this topic. And I think the interesting thing is, like, when creators are up and coming, they want work. They just want, you know, like, if you're a new writer, new artist, you want to work for anybody who'll pay you to work and get the, you know, job done and that sort of thing.
And get established.
You'll exactly.
Deserve, you know, it's a platform to get noticed.
And that was kind of what Kirkman was talking about in his little manifesto, which is that, and I didn't mean to be dismissive in his little manifesto. I mean, in his manifesto.
I think it's amazing how forward thinking he was, however many years later, like, it's coming to fruition a lot more.
Yep.
Than we expect.
It's totally coming to fruition. It just took a while for everyone to come around to it. Yeah. He got really lambasted for
people
that came out.
Well, because anytime you talk against Marvel and DC, everybody freaks out. But the point he made was, you know, go work for Marvel and DC, make a name for yourself, but then go create your own stuff. And I've talked to several creators who are later in their career now, and when they've gone creator owned, and when they talk about possibly going back to Marvel and DC, it's like, well, yeah, I can sit down, I can do a job for them. He's like, but, you know, if it involves creating a new character, why am I just going to give them something that I created, came up with? Yep. You know, and that's really what it boils down to. So,
Basically, and then, you know, Image versus Icon, they're both fully creator-owned. It's just, you know, like Matt Fraction got an exclusive at Marvel, so that, you know, they probably gave him better terms on it. They said, well, you know, move it over here. But everything that comes out from Icon is creator-owned. It's basically a boutique imprint created for their exclusive guys, basically.
Well, let's be honest. It was created by Marvel to allow their high-profile guys to do creator-owned work without going to places like Image.
And Vertigo, yeah.
And et cetera. You know, there was a way to keep their talent. That said, but then you still see people like Jonathan Hickman and Ed Brubaker who went from Marvel back to Image because of whatever behind the scenes deals are going on and all that sort of stuff. You know, it's been argued that the Marvel deal with Icon and the Image deal is different, in that Marvel still had their different gotchas and things because they're a corporate entity, whereas Image, their whole thing is like, you own it, you just do it, we just publish it. So.
Well, Kick-Ass changed the whole.
Yeah, exactly. Deal, because basically Kick-Ass, the book Marvel quote unquote published the book under Icon, then Miller made a movie, and Marvel didn't understand why they didn't make a cent from the movie. So
yeah,
because of the deal that you made.
Yeah.
They got Alan Moore. Mark Miller pulled a reversed Alan Moore on Marvel.
Yeah,
there are other companies that offer creator owned in various versions of it. You know, in some. You know, the company owns a small piece of it in exchange for printing it, or, you know, whatever costs they're putting out there. Everybody has a little bit slightly different version of the deal. I don't think Image is the only one who offers you 100% ownership, but they're the most prominent one. and they have the most sort of market share and clout. So
if you, that's where you want to go. I mean,
and that's the thing. I don't even feel safe saying that Image is the only one that is the only one that gives 100% ownership or doesn't give 100% ownership. But there's also there's all the stuff that we'll never know about because we don't get to read these contracts. We don't know, you know, and it's none of our business really. It's the publisher and the creator's business. But there's all like the buzz that you hear at Confloors and at the bar and stuff like that. It's like, okay, great. You got, you know, you have a creator on series, and if you want some sort of jump start with Hollywood or something like that, go to Dark Horse or go to Oni because that's what they're trying to do. Image isn't doing any Hollywood development stuff. They're just publishing books, and if something with Hollywood happens, that's up to you to deal with. You know, whereas Dark Horse and Oni are more involved in those kind of projects, and even Top Shelf to a certain degree these days too. So
yeah, a bunch of them are. There's dozens of them.
Yeah, so everybody does everything a little differently. Like IDW has a different deal than Image as well. You can still be creator owned, but there's a lot more licensing involved, a lot more, you know, things like that. So anyway,
boom.
Yeah, boom.
It's like, I think the Hypernaturals is creator owned, or at least Higher Earth is, at least to a certain extent.
Yeah, but I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure Boom is 100% creator owned. That's the thing.
No, I don't know either. And even, you know, in the old days, Vertigo
never was.
But partially, and those terms have changed a little bit, which I think is why you're not seeing as many properties be taken there as you are to Image.
Yep, exactly. So
the field has changed, Addy.
Yes. All right. So if you have any other questions, you can shoot us an email at contact@ifanboy.com. Now for some voicemail. Our first one's in a bit of a panic.
That's wrong.
This is Dave Warner. I'm calling from my parents' house in Boulder, Colorado, where there's a fire just over the ridge, and we've been put on pre-evacuation, which means that if the fire comes sweeping over the ridge, that you should get your most valuable stuff and get out. And so I've got something like 15 boxes of comic books in my parents' house, so I just went through and tried to grab the ones that I couldn't replace, which is an interesting process if for no other reason than you realize how many worthless comic books you have. But it is kind of strange in that, you know, which are the ones you can't replace. So I got a short box, and it's ready to go. So I guess my question is, if you had to do something like this, what kinds of things would you grab? What couldn't you replace? What would you, if you could only grab, you know, let's say a small handful? Anyway, hope all's well in your respective sides of the country, and I'll let you know if my house burns down. See ya.
Flee, Dave, flee.
Don't call us. Run.
You're a fool. Fly.
All right,
Our graphically offices are in Boulder, so we know all about the fires that are currently ravaging through Colorado. So if you are listening from Colorado, hopefully you are okay and your house is okay, or anyone you know.
Please be safe.
That being said, I would take none of them.
You really wouldn't take any of your comics?
I can't imagine running from a fire trying to carry a short box. Those things are still heavy.
Oh, I've thought about this a lot.
The only thing I would take might be a really sturdy Absolute Edition, which I could use as a weapon to fight off, you know, people who are fighting for, you know, the Mad Max style.
Well, it's not the end of the world. It's not the end times.
I like to pretend that in any situation, it's going to devolve into a Mad Max style future. And at that point, I probably need some sort of weapon.
Not a bad bit of planning.
I probably grab the Rocketeer Artist Edition. And then I have a little cachet of old issues that mean a lot to me, like the my X-Men 18 and the Green Arrow, Speedy shooting up, and those kind of things.
My first instinct was the first thing that popped into my head were.
It wasn't. That's why I'm laughing.
Oh, it's a specific question. I'd want to keep my original art.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing. I've got pages from books that I love, and not a ton of them. I don't have a lot, but I have original art from books that I've written that I would want to keep,
right.
And then some from some of my favorite books ever. And those would be the things I'd grab. You know, after that, the next word in my head was absolute, but I didn't really want to carry that stuff.
I think the absolutes are too big, and you honestly could replace them.
I don't have anything that's not replaceable.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I mean, I've got all my original art in those two kind of portfolio styles. I'd grab those. I'd grab the Rocketeer one, and then my those issues that mean a lot to me.
Now the question is: Are you escaping via car or your feet? Like, is this a situation where you have to run because the fire is bearing down? Feet,
then fuck that shit. I'm getting on my bike.
Again, wife and child. Wait,
I assume they're fine. I pictured this is a solo situation. It's just me and possessions.
Yeah.
All right, you've already sent them away ahead of time. I see.
They would have left.
Yeah.
Forget you.
No, they would have been like, "This is really dangerous." I'm like, "Yeah, crazy. It's fine." And then they would go, and then like 3 hours later, I'd be like, "I think they may have been right." Yeah. But you know, like the original pages.
The original pages is really good. That's probably more likely.
Yeah.
Other than that, I've come around a lot. I really feel like they're just books, and there's not like because of printing, everything is in print, you know, for the most part, and digital, and I, you know, then I can get everything again that I need to read. Maybe a guitar, but that's irrelevant to this.
A guitar you could also use as a weapon.
Definitely.
All right. So speaking of original art and artist editions, our next question's got a question about that.
Hey, guys. It's Ben Lavati from Westlake, Ohio, also known as Neb on the website. I'm sitting here holding my Daredevil Born Again Artist Edition, and it is beautiful and gorgeous and wonderful. And it got me to thinking, if you guys could choose any artist or any storyline from any publisher from any time period, what would you choose to put into an artist edition? Thanks a lot, guys. Love the show, and thanks again.
Before we get into our fantasy artist editions, how beautiful is that fucking Mazzucchelli Daredevil artist edition?
I don't know, Rob.
And blame my kid as the reason I don't have one of those.
It really might be the best artist edition yet. And Connor, when you look at it, I don't want to ruin it for you, but when you look at it, there's a couple of things that this differs from other artist editions that make.
Oh, the inserts?
Well, yeah. Okay, I'll go into the vellum overlays, additional bonus material, Mazzucchelli sketches, the finished pages, the cover galleries. Like it's the first artist edition with like trade extras.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's awesome. Anyway, fantasy artist editions. I would probably say Alan Davis, Captain Britain, that run.
That would work.
I would like an Alan Davis. Think of the artist editions that you can't have modern works because none of the word balloons will be there.
Not only that, but like a lot of stuff is added post digital now, and the pages are kind of cleaner.
Well, that's what the inserts in the Daredevil show is that a lot of the shadow work and everything was all done with these overlays. So there's a whole lot missing from the art.
Yeah. So no. I mean, it's just they did the art differently. It's not missing. It's just rather like
It's not on the page. It was on the overlay.
Well, yeah, because what happened? Like one of the overlays that struck at me was that it was like a cover one, and he had the figures in front, and the idea was the words were to be behind the figures. And now you just do the text in Photoshop and you put in the figures on top of it and boom, it works. Back then, he had to draw the words around the bodies and then overlay the rest of the, you know, like overlay the bodies on top of that. Like it's basically doing Photoshop layers, but like with paper. It's fascinating to see. It's amazing. So, but anyway, okay, your fantasy artist editions. Josh, go.
Jack Kirby, the Galactus Saga, Fantastic Four.
Nice, good one.
That is a good one.
Connor?
It would be too big, but it would be really cool to see, like, From Hell. Well, that's already black and white. But the sort of really scratchy style, that's already black and white, so I don't know if that counts as color.
I think it's on the page. They're like, that's good.
I like the Alan Davis idea of go back, but, like, in the DC side, he did his detective stuff in Batman. He was really the king back then.
Of course, I'd like to see, you know, Frank Miller's Wolverine or like the or Byrne, or the Dark Phoenix saga or Dark Knight Returns. Yeah, all those classic stuff would be good.
McFarlane on Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah, that'd be really good.
That'd be kind of amazing.
Yeah,
I think that Steve Dillon on Preacher would be really boring. It's just regular Sharpie.
Bic pen and Sharpie.
Yeah.
So, all right. So if you've got any questions, you can call us at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. Let's wrap this sucker up. If you need more to listen to on your commute or your walk to work or you're going to the gym or while you're working or whatever, we do more podcasts. We got tons of podcasts. For some reason, we've fallen into Mike Norton week at iFanboy. Earlier last week, we did a Talksplode with Mike Norton and Jamie S. Ray talking about the upcoming series It Girl from Image Comics. You can go back and get that on this feed or go to iFanboy.com to go listen to that. It was a great conversation to hear about the new series from them, starring a strong female lead character, which is rare these days. You can't find it at Marvel. And then additionally, coming up on iFanboy, don't miss, Chris Niesman talks to Mike Norton again about, Battle Pug. So, that should be, so that should be interesting to hear about.
Are we getting a cut of that book?
Or? No, I believe we gaffed in the contract negotiation. So we screwed up
again.
Yeah. But so yeah, go to iFanboy.com on Mondays to get iFanboy Don't Miss, where we talk to creators about books that are coming out, and go to iTunes to subscribe to iFanboy Don't Miss, please.
Cool. There's also the Make Comics podcast on Wednesdays. There's one coming up this next week, and there may be a week or two off because of San Diego. I'll be honest with you. But after that, I'll be chock full of good ideas, and we'll get it back on track. And in that, I speak with Andy Schmidt, head of Comics Experience, which is a school of sorts for people who want to make comics, and a former Marvel editor and IDW editor, and we talk about, we'll pick a little something about making comics in some aspect and try to get into it just a little bit. Hopefully it's very helpful for you. I've been hearing very good feedback on it for all the billions of you who want to make comics.
If you're not too busy escaping a fire, you can go to fanboy.com. You can read Josh's Pick of the Week review. You can, for right now, read my Book of the Month review. Who is up next?
I am. I actually got a couple of different options.
I had a total panic attack just then, and then also a few days ago.
Yeah. So you will be able to read.
Oh, okay, it's not me. Oh, God, thanks.
Hopefully before San Diego happens, and then at that point, you might as well just write it off if it doesn't happen by San Diego.
Oh, no, I've got. It'll be for next week. I got a couple options. So.
All right, you can read that next week. You can also read all the great writing that happens every day from all of our great writers. You can go to ifanboy.com/about to see the staff and the social network links. You can be our friend online. And you can follow all the iFanboy action at twitter.com/ifanboy and facebook.com/ifanboy.
And you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697 with any questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics, what have you. Wonderful batch of voicemails this week, I must say. These are not the only ones we got. We got a ton of good ones. We had to pick and choose a little, but thank you for the great calls. Keep them coming.
And if you like what we do, go to iTunes, as I mentioned earlier, and write a review of this podcast, of the Don't Miss podcast, or the Make Comics podcast. Actually, don't write a review of this podcast. We got enough. Go to the other ones. Go to Don't Miss. Go to Make Comics. Josh has been doing such a good job of Make Comics that I'm going to go write a review in praise of it. So there you go. So join me. Why won't you? Or if you don't use iTunes and you still want to help out, help spread the word. Tell your friends. Go to the comic book shop. Tell everybody. Preach from the mountains about how great iFanboy is. We love so many of you. Help us spread the word, and we appreciate it. We thank you so much for it. So, excellent. Countdown to San Diego has begun. We're less than 2 weeks away. So next week, be sure to tune in, and we'll have all of our details about San Diego. So that's going to happen.
That's happening.
Yeah. So until then, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Josh. Thank you very much for listening. And thank you, too, for joining me on this program.
What?
It's